Yehuda told Tamar to go back as a widow to her father's house. And the pasuk says that she listened. Vatelech Tamar, Tamar went, Vateshev Beis Aviha, and she settled in her father's house. Rabbi Soloveitchik sees in this a parallel, or a mashal almost, for the conduct of the Jewish people in Galus. He talks about Shir Hashirim, which describes the story of a girl who's in love with a boy, and one day the boy disappears. And the girl wanders all over looking for him. And people see her and say, why don't you just dump him and find somebody else? But she says, no, I love him. Promise me if you see him that you'll tell him how much I love him. People come and beat her up. Why are you being so dumb? You keep on waiting for him and looking for him. Just dump him and find somebody else. But she says, no, I'm going to stay faithful to him. I'm going to wait patiently for him to come back and reveal himself to me. And even though they beat her up, she refuses to be discouraged, and she remains patient, and she remains faithful. And then, you know, after many long days of searching, one night she's lying down, and she's ready to fall asleep, and there's a knock on the door, and she debates with herself, should I get up? I'm so tired. I'm already for bed. And she's like going back and forth and back and forth, should I get up and answer the door or not? And finally, she gets up and opens the door, but by then it's too late. She's missed the opportunity. He's gone again. And Rabbi Soloveitchik points out, and this is something that all of the Mefarshim say, that, you know, Shir HaShirim is not a plain, you know, love story. It's a mashal for the love between Hashem and the Jewish people, or between the Jewish people and Hashem. And every mashal is a story that corresponds to things in real life. And so the things in real life that correspond to the mashal are called the nimshal. And in this case, the nimshal of Shir HaShirim, the girl corresponds to the Jewish people, the boy corresponds to Hashem. The boy's disappearance, that's the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and the fact that Hashem's presence is no longer visible and tangible to us in a way that it was in the olden days. We're going around, and who's urging us, just dump him, right? The Christians in their time, and the Muslims in their time, and the communists in their time, right? And all the different ideologies, you know, postmodern liberalism, right, or conservatism, all of them are asking us, stop being loyal, stop being faithful, stop waiting patiently for Hashem, right, to come and reveal himself like he promised, and instead give your loyalty to us. Convert to a different religion. Help us destroy Torah values and put up other values in their place. But the reaction of the girl in Shir HaShirim, in the mashal, and the reaction of the Jewish people in the nimshal is to say, no, I'm going to be patient, I'm going to be faithful, I'm going to be loyal to Hashem and his Torah, and I'm going to wait for the time to come when he's ready to reveal himself to us again. And so Shir HaShirim is a mashal for the love of Am Yisrael for Hashem. And Rabbi Soloveitchik says there's an amazing similarity between Tamar in our story, right, and the heroine of Shir HaShirim. And that is that just like the girl in Shir HaShirim is patient and faithful and loyal, so too Tamar. She's pretty, she's rich, she's well-connected, and she's waiting and waiting and waiting at home for Yehuda to call her back and say that Shelah is ready to marry her. And she's waiting longer than she expected to wait. And maybe people were encouraging her, just dump Yehuda, dump Shelah, find somebody else to get married to. You're pretty, you're rich, you're well-connected. There's surely no shortage of boys who are interested in you. But she says, no, because I know that what I'm waiting for is worth the wait. And that's the same thing that Klal Yisrael does. Right? Even though we're encouraged, you know, by all of those people around us to just give it up already and follow something or someone else. But we know that Mashiach and the Beis HaMikdash and the Gilui Shechina, those things are worth the wait, and our patience and loyalty and faithfulness will be rewarded. They'll pay off. And so that's how Tamar is similar to the heroine of Megillas Shir HaShirim. Eventually, though, it becomes already a bit much, and Tamar decides to take matters into her own hands. She's not going to wait for Yehuda to summon her to marry Shelah, but she actually is going to go and try to force him to perform the mitzvah of Yibum and to bring her back into his family. He goes, and Tamar, she goes, she dresses up in a veil, covers her face, changes her black, mourning clothing, right, into something a little bit lighter, and she waits by the crossroads where she knows that Yehuda is going to pass by. And the pasuk tells us that Yehuda passed by and mistook her for a zona, and he asked her to do something with her. And the Arachayim and Medrash and all the Mefarshim are troubled. A tzaddik like Yehuda is talking to a zona. What got into him? And the basic approach that we're going to take, that the Arachayim takes, is that Hashem made Yehuda temporarily insane. He went out of his mind. He was like a crazy person who doesn't have control over his actions. And Hashem did that deliberately for a purpose that we'll discuss later on. But again, he wasn't acting with free will in this situation. He was compelled by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do what he did. And this was not a free choice that he made. However, this itself, raised the question. There's a concept called Hashta Behemton Shel Tzadikim. Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mevi Takala Al Yedehem. Which means that Hashem won't allow the animal of a tzaddik, the donkey or the sheep or the horse of a tzaddik, to eat something not kosher without, just by accident. And Kal V'chomer, certainly, Hashem won't allow a tzaddik himself to eat something non-kosher by accident. The Gemara tells a story about the donkey of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair, Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair was on his way to redeem some captives who had been captured by robbers. He stopped off at the hotel, and in the middle of dinner, the owner of the hotel tapped him on the shoulder and said, "Excuse me, Rabbi, but we're having a problem down in the stables. Your donkey is refusing to eat its dinner." And Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair looked at the hotel owner and said to him, "Are you serving it kosher food? Did you take off the trumos and the maestros from the fruits and vegetables that you're serving it, which is necessary in Israel before the fruits and vegetables can be kosher?" And the owner gave him a sheepish look and said, "You're right, I didn't take off trumos and maestros." Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair said, "Take off the trumos and maestros, then give the food to that donkey again." And of course, the donkey ate it after the food was kosher. And that's basically that Hashem does not let even the animal of a tzaddik eat something that's not kosher by accident. And so the Ramban is troubled and said, what's going on here? If Hashem makes miracles almost to prevent tzaddikim from by accident eating non-kosher, so then how could it be that over here that Hashem made a miracle to force Yehuda to do something inappropriate? Seems just the opposite. Hashem should make miracles to prevent him from doing Averas, rather than miracles that force him to do Averas. So in class, guys had a bunch of really good, answers to this question. The Ramban gives an interesting answer, and that's based on the difference between Yibum after the Torah was given and Yibum before the Torah was given. The Ramban explains that after the Torah was given, only the brother of the dead man could fulfill the mitzvah of Yibum. None of the other relatives can do that. Before the Torah was given, the Ramban says, any relative of the dead person could fulfill the mitzvah of Yibum, whether it's the dead man's brother, whether it's the dead man's father, the dead man's uncle, the dead man's cousin, they all were valid candidates to fulfill the mitzvah of Yibum. And so the Ramban says, in reality, what Hashem forced Yehuda to do wasn't an Aveira. It was a mitzvah. It was the pre-Matan Torah mitzvah of Yibum. He married the widow of his son. His son had died without children, and he married his son's widow. That was a fulfillment of Yibum before the Torah was given. And so what Hashem made Yehuda do wasn't an Aveira. It was actually kind of a mitzvah. And that also is going to explain later on why originally Yehuda condemned Tamar to death. She violated her faithfulness to the memory of her dead husband and the family of her dead husband. But as soon as Tamar reveals that he was the one who's the father of her babies, suddenly he reverses the death penalty because he realizes what she did wasn't an Aveira. It wasn't violating her, the faith to her dead husband. It was fulfilling her responsibility to her dead husband by doing Yibum with him. What three objects did Yehuda give Tamar as a collateral? So he gave her his ring and his tzitzis and his staff. What did Yehuda do to try to redeem his collateral? He sent the baby goat that he had promised, which, when you give what you promise to pay, then you get back the collateral. The problem is that his friend who was bringing the baby goat to redeem the collateral couldn't find the woman whom Yehuda had thought was a zona. She wasn't there. In the Hebrew words of the pasuk, why did Yehuda stop trying to redeem his collateral? So the answer to that is, he said, pen nihiye lavuz, because maybe we will be a bizayon, we'll be a laughingstock, we'll be embarrassed, we'll look foolish, we'll be ashamed. That's what bizayon, lavuz means. And that's foreshadowing the tremendous nisayon that Yehuda is going to have later on, when he's going to be forced to choose between admitting to what he did and suffering the bizayon and the shame and the embarrassment that comes with people knowing what he had done, right? Or right, whether perhaps to cowardly hide and not admit to what he did, in which case Tamar would die. It was a very difficult choice for Yehuda, which just makes his making the right decision all the more heroic. He says, pen nihiye lavuz. I understand that if we keep on asking for the zona, people will realize what happened, and then we are going to be incredibly embarrassed. When Yehuda found out, right, or that Tamar had been mizana with someone before he knew that it was himself, what punishment did he decree upon her? He decreed that she should be put to death by burning. What did Tamar do to reveal to Yehuda that he was the father of her babies? She sent a private message to him, right, with the ring and the tzitzis and the staff. And she said, the owner of these three objects is the father of my babies. She didn't say it was you. She didn't say it in public. She sent him a private message. The owner of these three things is the father of my babies. Now, Chazal are troubled. Like, she's about to be executed. She's about to be killed. She doesn't deserve to die. So why doesn't she just yell it for everyone to hear? It was Yehuda. I don't deserve to die. This was Yibum. It was from Yehuda. And Chazal explained a tremendous lesson that we learn from Tamar's conduct here. And that is that it's better for a person to give up their life and to be burned to death than it is to shame someone else in public. And the Gemara actually tells a story that there was once a rabbi and a rebbetzin, and they were giving out tzedakah, and they were almost discovered by the recipient of their tzedakah. And they knew that if the recipient discovered who had been giving them the tzedakah, that person would be terribly embarrassed. And so they ran away, and the guy chased after them, and they were running, and they ran down a dead-end alley, and the guy was chasing after them, and the only thing that was there was a bakery, and they ran into the bakery, and they jumped into the baker's oven and closed the door behind them to prevent that person from being embarrassed. And they learned that from Tamar, that it's better to basically give up your life rather than embarrass somebody. Of course, Hashem made a miracle for them, and they managed to come out of that oven alive. But again, the point is that just like we give up our life rather than murder somebody, we also give up our life rather than shame somebody in public. And that's what Chazal learned from Tamar's conduct. Now, the words that Tamar used when she sent this message to Yehuda, the words were Haker na, please recognize. Lemi hachosemes v'hapisilim v'hamateh ha'ela. To whom, right, is this ring and these tzitzis and this staff? To whom do they belong? Please recognize them. And we pointed out that there are two places, Rashi points this out, that there are two places where the words haker na appear in Parashas Vayeshev. Once is here. And the other one is after the Shvatim shechted the goat and dipped the coat in blood, and they sent the coat to Yaakov, with the message, Haker na, please recognize, is this your son's coat or not? And Rashi points out that that this was Mida Keneged Mida. Yehuda sinned with the words Haker na, and now he's being punished with the words Haker na. He caused tremendous anguish and pain to Yaakov Avinu with those two words, and now he himself is being placed on the horns of a dilemma and is going to experience a lot of shame and embarrassment and negative feelings with those same words, all precipitated by those same words of Haker na. And so that is Mida Keneged Mida, right, which Rav Chaim Shmulevitz says is designed so that you know that there's justice in the world, so that you know what you need to work on so that you shouldn't fall in the same trap again. Right? Yehuda was supposed to think, ooh, I'm being punished with these words, Haker na. What have I done using the words Haker na that could have possibly been a sin that matches this punishment? This was supposed to sort of drive home to him that it had been a really, really bad thing to sell Yosef and to deceive Yaakov Avinu. Yehuda sees the three things and he recognizes that they are his and that he is the father of Tamar's babies. And he recognizes that what she had done and what he had done wasn't an avera of Zinus, but rather was a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Yibum. And so he exclaims, Tzadka mimeni, which Rashi interprets, she is a tzadekes, she's a righteous woman, mimeni, the babies are mine. That's Yehuda's confession, that the babies are his. And then finally, we finished off that the babies are born and they are named. The names of Yehuda's five sons are, the original three are Er and Onan and Shelah, and then the last two that he has with Tamar, their names are Peretz and Zerach. And some of them were named by Yehuda's wife, some were named by Yehuda, and some were named by the doctor who delivered them. So, for example, the first baby, Er, was named by Yehuda. The second baby, Onan, was named by Yehuda's wife, who the Torah doesn't tell us her name. The third baby was also named by Yehuda's wife because Yehuda wasn't there when the baby was born. He was unavoidably absent someplace else. And so his wife named the third baby as well. And the last two babies, it seems, were named by a woman. Unclear whether that was by Tamar or by the doctor who delivered them, the midwife. But again, the way that we know it is because when it's a man who's naming the baby, we say Vayikra Eshemo, and he called the baby's name. When it's a woman who's naming the baby, so we say Vatikra Eshemo, she called the baby's name. Again, there's significance here in terms of, who names babies, what should the order be. It's very important for a husband, to be present, when his wife is having a baby. And also just of interest, that Yehuda did not name the last two babies, but it probably was a midwife. Tamar didn't name them either. That's significant as well.